My background is in early childhood education. I did a degree at Bank Street College of Education, for those of you who are early childhood educators. I taught for about 8 years and then worked for a peace and justice organization named Clergy and Lady Concerned for 4 years, editing their magazine in the early 80s. And then I decided that having thought about issues in our country from a more political perspective, that what I really wanted to do was to go back and apply some of that thinking to the area of young children. And so I went back to graduate school in family policy at Teachers College at Columbia and began working at the National Council of Churches. And it has been very exciting work. I'm very pleased to have been there. I have 2 children, one of whom you've seen, one of whom you haven't, because she has chicken pox currently, and we're stranded up on the hill. But but she does exist. You'll see her about Friday or Saturday. We'll be able to come down again. But my little one, you'll see around, Daniel. And my husband is David Wildman, who you will probably, you may or may not see, but he's also teaching and doing Middle East issues. So it's a treat for us to be able to go to each other's sessions. So why don't we go around now, and if you will, say your name and where you're from and why you're here.
I'm from Bellevue, Washington, and I'm here because I think that I just have a feeling that our church should be doing something for children. We are a very active church that does a lot of social things, mm-hmm. and we've had a feeding program for the street people in Seattle that our church does in May every year. Other churches do it in different. But we're servicing mostly grown people, you know, older people, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. few children. But with the great need now that's before us for the children, I think that I want to find out something that maybe we can do in a entirely different direction for them.
Yeah. We'll try and think of something. Okay. Go ahead.
I'm Grant Austin from Denver, Colorado, and I'm here because our church Social Action Committee just recently said that maybe one thing we could do in our neighborhood would be to do some kind of service for children, and I think child care is something we're looking into as an option.
Good, okay.
I'm Karen Nicholson, I'm from Seattle, and my daughter-in-law just got a master's in early childhood development.
Oh, good for her, good.
I'm interested in issues.
Good, okay.
I'm Claudia Browers. I've been living in Rhode Island, and Saturday I'm moving to Germany. I'm sort of a prisoner who doesn't have an address. And I'm a mother. And I, in the 60s, was a member of a church that did run a daycare center mm-hmm. and a weekend drop-in type of program. I was involved in that. And it's interesting. It doesn't seem like anything like that continues to go on anymore. So mm-hmm. concerned about child care from all ends.
Margaret Menz from Eureka, California, and we just have a new pastor who's very interested in doing something with children in our area. It's everything else in our church has grown except the children's program. Mm-hmm. I'm also on the board for St. Luke's Manor, the local convalescent hospital, and we're considering doing a child care program mm-hmm. for the mm-hmm. mothers of the workers in the
great. Well needed. Yeah.
So we shall see how it goes.
Good. Excellent.
I'm Irma Murphy from Minneapolis, and I'm just curious as to what you have to say. I've been a member of 2 churches, one in which the child care program drowned the church, and the other one in which it's flourishing beautifully.
Okay. What did you say? The child care program?
It really became a detriment to the church in that they lost many members, and because the child care unit took over the facilities, mm-hmm. and there were no facilities then for the members, it was just too much to give.
The whole church child care center relationship is a very big issue, and I want to talk something about that.
And they had a bad experience
with yours isn't the only church.
That contributes to it.
Good. Okay, we'll talk about that.
Mm-hmm. I'm Carol Avery, and we have 3 daughters, and child care has, I just know what a crying need there is for good child care. I feel so fortunate that I've been able to find child care givers who work out of their home, so it's a family sort of feeling. But our church runs a preschool program, which our daughter Katie is enrolled in the fall, and she can't wait. So it's a 3-day week, just in the mornings kind of thing, as preschool. But it is such a ministry for the church. It really is just a wonderful program. So, and I wish they would do something with daycare, because I know what a need there is out there.
Yeah, good.
I'm Andrea Cornwall. Actually, I have been, until July 1st, a family child care provider for 28 years. And was president of Washington State Family Child Care Association, which has like about 1,000 members.
Good
of
for you.
Care.
Wow.
So I come with a bias in that I'm very supportive of family child care as the primary, as the best, and a well-run child care center which is able to age-integrate the children as the second best setting for kids. However, in our church, there was and again is consideration of doing a child care center, but we have a very poor example of a, quote, Lutheran church in our area that there is really nothing more than a money-making child care center. I mean, it's the kind of a thing that you shudder and say, yeah, I'm Lutheran, but, and yeah, I'm in child care, but, because this is such a bad example.
Quality is one of the things I want to look at, because it's certainly the central issue when you're talking about child care, and it's not simple. To provide quality care.
Mm-hmm. My name is Linda, and I'm from Newport, Oregon, and I am a family daycare provider, and I have all the credentials.
And parenthetically, we're going to talk specifically about family child care tomorrow.
Yeah.
I mean, we will touch on it today, but I was focusing on center-based care today.
Mm-hmm. Our church also runs a service that's now in its second year for displaced homemakers and young, you know, mothers trying to go back to school, and services primarily the children that come are a product of that in the community and not, you know. So, and that's been, from I think, been well received in this.
Okay. I'm Nona Sabak, and I'm from Albany, Oregon, and I've taught a preschool for 20 years. And our church is looking into starting a child care preschool combination in the church. It will involve some remodeling we've been talking about it, and this, you came here, and this is perfect for me.
Great. Well, good. We've got a lot of resources, so pass them on.
I'm David Wildman. I'm Karen's husband. And with two small children, I have a major concern about children, and also a chance to hear Karen. It's so rare that our schedules are such that we can sit in on one another's work. But I also have a real strong sense that men need to take much more responsibility for childcare. And so,
you're here.
It's exciting to see that I'm not the only man here.
That's great. My name is Paul Menard. Our church doesn't run any programs, but they provide the facilities for two different young people's programs. One's a Montessori school, and the other is a Mom's Day Out kind of program for, and our kids go to that. And then they have a latchkey program for children after the school. But the church, the ministers don't participate in the programs, but they provide the facilities.
Great. Okay.
I'm Sue Roberts from Reno, Nevada, and my background is child development and childhood education, and in fact I teach, and I've been involved in teaching and directing programs in several churches, but right now the church to which I belong is a downtown church in Reno, and it's a very, like Doris's church, a very, very socially active church and has all kinds of programs, and our pastor got the idea that we should be providing low-cost child care for casino workers. And unfortunately, we have a facility which I can't in my wildest imagination imagine being a quality, a facility. We don't even have a parking lot. I mean, we have no outside space. Mm-hmm. We have, we're right downtown. We have no, it's the only the only space available is in the basement of the church, sort of the dungeon. And while we have it all painted up and it's great for Sunday morning programs and so forth for a couple of hours, you know, the thought of consigning 145 children, which is what social services tells us we have enough square footage for, to this area for, you know, 10 hours a day or something just appalls me. But and so I guess I'm kind of looking for what might be some alternatives for us to consider.
Okay, good, good. Okay, I'd like to start the session by just reading this biblical passage together, and then I'm just going to offer a very brief prayer, because I think it's, you know, this is the context out of which we come, and I think it's an important place for us to begin in terms of being clear about what we're doing and why we're here. Whoever welcomes one, and read with me.
Whoever welcomes one such child in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me.
Loving God, be with us this afternoon as we think about your children who are being cared for by people other than their parents and their relatives. Let us think carefully about how to support those families and how to love those children in the very best ways possible. It is through you that we do our best thinking and that we work. Make us instruments and vehicles of your work in this world. Amen. I'd like to start by telling you about a study that happened at the National Council of Churches several years ago. It was done by the office that I work in, although it was several years before I came. In 1982, 1983, the Ford Foundation and the Carnegie Corporation gave us some money to find out what was happening in congregations across the United States in terms of child care. This came out of several years of work where staff representatives from different communions who belonged to the National Council of Churches, including at that point the LCA and the ALC. I'm not a looper, you can tell. Came to those meetings, and it became clear that child care was one of the real burning issues among people attending churches across the country, but that the national churches themselves knew very little about what was actually going on at the congregational level. So we embarked on a study called the Child Care Study, in which we sent questionnaires to 87,000 local churches across the country in, I think it was 11 or 12 different communions, different national denominations. And what we identified, we got a response rate of 29%, something like this. We identified 18,000 programs in 14,000 churches. And knowing what we did about the response rate, what's happening in the Southern Baptist Communion and other churches that are not a part of the National Council of Churches and therefore were not in the study, it became clear that the church is by far the largest provider of child care in the United States, larger than the government or any other private organization. And as such, churches have both an enormous opportunity and a profound responsibility to be involved with children and families in terms of thinking about and providing quality care for those families. I want to just do a quick overview, and I'm going to go into more facts and figures a little bit later, but I want to do a real quick look at, so why is child care important? And I'm going to throw out a few ideas, and I want you to throw out a few more after I finish. There are more than 6 million children every day in this country who are in child care, out of home care. That means care that not with their families or relatives. And over 2 million of those are younger than 3 years of age. So more than 2 million of those children are infants and toddlers. We have acquired a lot of research over the last few years, last couple decades, which has demonstrated that preschool education, quality preschool education, can be extremely important in the lives of young children, particularly in the lives of young children whose environments are otherwise not enriching in the way that those children need, and that therefore quality preschool education is critically important. We know that mothers women are entering the workforce in greater numbers than men. We know that there are going to be more and more children needing childcare over the next few years than there are now. We also know that there is a critical short supply of childcare, especially quality childcare, and therefore that we must address the issue of childcare because families need the care, they're going to find it somewhere, and it needs to be quality care in order to guarantee that kind of developmental experience for our children. Bad care can endanger children. But what are some of the other things that you've thought of about why is childcare important from your experience? What have you seen which really tells us why childcare is important?
I'd say two things. Number one is that I think more and more of us feel the absolute necessity for both members of the household to work. I mean, it's just a product of our culture nowadays. And had I the choice, were I independently wealthy, I wouldn't work. But I don't have that choice. It's just part of our survival. Number two is I have experience with a neighbor lady who has a daycare center. She's licensed in the state of Washington, and yet I have reason to feel that it is not a quality daycare situation. I mean, we hear screaming at the children from across the doorway. Here's somebody with a license who proudly announces that she is licensed. And so I worry about what licensing means, what the state looks at is more of square footage kind of thing. How do you govern what is quality care? Because obviously you can meet the state regulations and not necessarily be quality care.
Yeah.
Well, I'm convinced that there's so much significant development that takes place so young in a child's life. And all of those things are so critical. By the time they're from that group of toddlers on, I mean, a lot has been formed for them already for their whole future. And they just are the future of our society. They are the future leaders, the future decision makers, and everything. And I just think even if you don't have children yourself and all you are is a citizen of the planet, you should become involved in it in some way. I mean, it's sort of the greater good kind of picture. If we provide this care, everyone benefits.
That child developmentists have said that 40% of what a child ever knows, what a human being ever knows, they know by the time they're 4 years old.
Isn't that just
And 80% of what we know by the time we're 8 years old. So that if we're serious about, these young children becoming our future leaders, and
those are the years,
and productive
not
citizens,
when they're juvenile delinquents or
that's
something
right.
when they're
that's
18.
Right. The argument is certainly for work on the front end rather than the back end. Work with those children
not
early.
Repair work.
That's right.
Because
so
much of the repair doesn't seem to work.
And piggybacking on what you said, Carolyn, I mean, it's absolutely true that that one of the problems with ensuring quality care in this country is the lack of regulation. There was a study done. I'm going to move because I can't see.
Oh, I should that.
There was a study done some time back people who were involved in enforcement of regulations in the states for childcare, and 18 of the states said that their systems were woefully inadequate because of limitations of staff. So the states themselves are saying that they can't do a good job because they don't have the money, or they haven't been given the money to put the staff on to be able to do the simple kinds of things that need to be done to ensure quality care. We know what quality care is. We have standards and yardsticks that have been developed by professional organizations and medical organizations, et cetera, et cetera. But at this point in time, our politicians have not seen fit to allocate enough money for that regulation and implementation to take place.
Well, also, the people that work in childcare are one of the lowest paid people there are.
Right.
And it's kind of a vicious circle because the parents that need the childcare are just starting out and they don't have a lot of money. And so
That's
they can't really afford to pay as much as really they should to the child care providers.
Uh-huh.
And so it ends up the child care providers are, they look for jobs that pay more.
Mm-hmm. And child care providers, I mean, having a good provider is the most important piece of your system. If you don't have quality people in your center or in your home, your family child care home, then you're not going to be able to have quality care for those children. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know the stats on family child care, how quickly people move in and out of doing family child care. But I do know some of there has been research. Do either of you know that?
I know we have a large daycare center next door to us, and I'm amazed at the number of the workers who have out-of-state license plates, mm-hmm. which to me is a sign that, mm-hmm. one, that they're new to town, and secondly, that they come and go.
Yeah.
And how can you check on people like that when nobody has any references
exactly.
on them?
Oh, you do checks. They do police checks. In many states, the state of Washington, for example, is highly regulated. But I think the point that Carol made is appropriate in that you can do all of the checks on a person, you can do all of the answers, and you can provide an appropriate, safe environment, physically safe environment. But when it comes to programmatic things and actual skills, a lot of that depends on the policing by the parents. In this state, in our association, there is a pretty good stability of providers because they're able to afford to do it and to become professional. In other states where limits are placed on the number of children who can be in a family, it's only something that's done until you can get, quote, a real job. Mm-hmm. You know, it's bread and butter. As long as it's nothing more than bread and butter money, there's no feeling of professional or any desire to improve your care. One of the problems that we have, I know at the daycare centers, is a high turnover in staff because of the low pay. And again, you have a lot of young people who are doing this while they're looking for a real job.
In 1987, over half of child care workers in this country earned less than $5 an hour. Mm-hmm. And the average for... there's a staggering chart in here. The average annual wages work, which is calculated at 35 hours a week, full-time, for 50 weeks of a year, for a person with a high school diploma or less, the average annual earnings are $8,120, which puts them below the poverty level.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
For even a family of two, but definitely for a family of three or four. For men in the civil labor force, a high school diploma or less will afford them $24,100. If you have some college, a child care provider earns $9,293 a year, as opposed to in the civil labor force for men, $29,000. If you are a college graduate or more, which a significant number of child care providers are, the average annual salary is $11,603. Mm-hmm. And the average turnover, the annual turnover in child care is 41%. People leaving the field. And as you were saying, you know, that you can't have a quality program with 41% turnover rate. If you can't keep people and do the in-service training as well as the professional training that you need, then you're just not going to be able to have a quality program. So wages and benefits are a central issue for any church that is thinking about starting a program. There was another issue that...
Oh, I was going to make a comment backing up.
May I just beg you? There was one thing that you mentioned, I forgot who it was that mentioned, was talking about that also quality of what goes on in the center is largely... can be monitored, if not by federal agencies, by parents.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
And one of the problems is that 29 states out of our 50 do not guarantee parents' right of access to child care programs.
Washington is not one of those 29.
You mean the parents can't go in to see what's going on?
The states do not guarantee access. That's right. That's right. That means if the program makes the decision that you can't come in during the day, then you cannot go in during the day.
What frequently happens is that in order to, quote, not disrupt the program, the parent comes to the reception area and a member of the staff goes and brings the child to the reception area. And that is so that the parent does not disrupt the program. I have certain biases against
that. Is that how it is in Washington or no?
No.
And what the legislation which is coming in child care is part of that is for all states to be mandated to require that all centers and family child care providers guarantee access at any time during the day by parents as a one way of working towards assuring quality.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to toss something out regarding the whole pay discussion. I've been for a number of years living overseas in an American military community where we have a child care facility provided by the federal government but run through not the appropriated fund budget but monies generated locally through a non-appropriated funded mm-hmm. budget, but it's still a government agency nonetheless. They did a survey to deal with this whole issue of turnover and pay, the two mm-hmm. biggest issues in child care. And it was interesting to see that the wage scale that came out of it, they were also developing sliding scales for payment for families participating. But the wage scale ended up topping, I think, at $10 plus an hour for staff. And I think it began at $4.65 an hour. It was higher than minimum wage. Mm-hmm. But see, there were no state regulations involved either because it was just neutral federal turf. But it was very interesting because some of the employees who are currently in the program with their levels of experience and education, when that was implemented, over doubled their wages just when they changed it. Because there were so many women who had been, you know, how many, 20 years, 28 years, I mean, they were people who had worked professionally, had training, had gone through, you know, kept their training going, but had almost doubled their income once that came to that level. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty exciting to see, because the parents were pretty excited to know that,
still isn't
maybe,
very high.
No, but in terms of impacting it, and remember, it is the federal government, the biggest stumbling bureaucracy we have, I was fairly impressed with that. And it's a very, you know, limited thing, but I thought at least you could hear some of the progress in terms of pay.
We don't have as many child care providers in this country as we need, mm-hmm. and we don't have as many qualified child care providers, certainly, as we need, at a time when child care is expanding, particularly child care for very young children, for infants and toddlers. So we have a crisis on our hands in terms of not only getting but keeping people probably like your daughter-in-law who will be quality child care providers. Mm-hmm. And so we have to begin to build a system which will encourage people not only to move into the system, but to stay.
I just wanted to make a couple of quick comments. In the state of Oregon, you have to have more on the ball to run a dog kennel than you do family daycare, which
that's
I do.
Probably true.
That's a real sad comment on our society, but it's true. To be registered in the state involves a phone call, and it's you know, real demeaning in a way. I mean, anybody can read the rules. The other comment is, it's good to see men here, because the fathers that I have in my child care children are really aware of what this is. And until more men and more politicians say, yes, we need this, until more large corporations and men who unfortunately still remain in the administrative helm and are the appropriators of funds, the child care issue is going to remain low-paying.
But there's still, in Oregon, there's a company that is developing a child care in their new facility.
And
who's that? It's called Intergraphics.
Oh.
And they're putting out information, you know, they're trying to hire people. And the pay for the child care director was, I forgot what it was, like in the early 20s, 20,000, but my son-in-law, who happens to work there, is making $39,000 as a computer programmer, and it's just still in big corporations they're not making.
They're still not able to appropriate and see at the political level. I mean, you know, national level, they're still, even though they talk about it, when the actual comes down to funding and really making decisions, it gets you know.
That's right, and. You have to, I mean, and it is the problem that child care is expensive. I mean, that's another major issue in child care, mm-hmm. is that it's very tough for people to buy child care.
Mm-hmm.
And even when you pay fairly high rates for your child care, your child care providers are earning relatively very little. Mm-hmm. So that when we're talking about building a system of child care, we're talking about building in supports from somewhere, somehow. And that's an important part of the discussion. And I think we also, when we're talking about wages, we need to remember that we need also to talk about benefits. Child care providers get very few benefits. Very few child care providers get benefits. And yet, the child care force is mostly women, mm-hmm. and many of those women are themselves single parents, mm-hmm. or perhaps heads of household. There are a lot of women in this country, although we don't realize it very often, who actually have more earning power than their husbands. And that we can't automatically assume that men earn more than women, because there are a lot. It is certainly, again, an issue for any church which is thinking about running a child care program, that you have to think about being responsible not only to those children, but to the people that are a part of that program, that are the staff of that program. Let me just tell you a few other things that are problematic in terms of providing quality care. 43% of the children in child care today are unprotected by state regulation. 22% of the states exempt family child care programs with five children or fewer from any kind of regulation.
Family child care with five or fewer?
Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. Oregon, isn't it? Isn't it five or fewer?
Well, I know many that have run 10 and 12 through and are not.
But I mean legally.
Well, yeah, but see, nobody's going to check you. So yeah.
In New York City, for example, we know that there are approximately 21,000 family child care providers. And yet there's only about 1,500 or 2,000 who are licensed. And it's not because we don't have the regulation, it's because we don't have the implementation
mm-hmm. yeah.
structure to make it happen.
So it's meaningless.
Right. 13 states, in terms of family child care, don't require that the children be immunized to be in the programs.
Still?
19 states allow five or more infants to be taken care of by one adult.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's terrifying. It's terrifying. Well, and what we know.
I'm assuming that's center.
Yes.
That's center. I'm sure that there's nothing in family daycare that allows that in family.
Oh, yes, there are.
I'm sure that's center.
No, there. It's family child care as well.
Hmm.
32 states do not require specific levels of formal training for teachers in child care programs. Mm-hmm. That's how unregulated it is at this point. Mm-hmm. And then the other big problem, of course, is insufficient quantity. We also just don't have the slots for people, so that there are many people in the society who would like to work, but they can't find child care mm-hmm. that they can afford. Satisfactory child care that they can afford. They in New York City, they did a study, I believe it was in 1987, and they found only, they calculated how much infant care was necessary, knowing how many employed mothers there were with infants in the city, and they found that there was 6% of the slots available relative to the number of care that was needed, which means that a lot of families will have in-home babysitters or what other kinds of arrangements, or unregulated family child care. So there's clearly a great need out there, and there's a great need not only for, I think, churches to get involved in setting up child care centers, and tomorrow I want to talk about particularly what churches can do in terms of supporting family child care providers and the family child care system, because we know that approximately 25% of the children are in child care centers. And approximately 25% are in child care centers, and 22% are in family child care homes. And the others are taken care of by relatives or babysitters. So that we know that there is an enormous need to talk about family child care within our churches, as well as talking about center-based care. And I think it's family child care is that part of the care system which is not talked about very much and which is not really recognized and which is often not understood. And so I think that when we're talking about what our churches, our local congregations can do, we need to think not only about center-based care, but to think about what churches can do in terms of supporting the family child care providers in their community, some of whom are certainly sitting in the pews on Sunday morning. I also want to talk a little bit about not only what we can do and what churches can do in terms of direct service, but what churches ought to be doing in terms of public policy and advocacy. Because I think that our churches have a responsibility on both levels. So why don't we talk about those things? Oops. Well, let's just do a
when you were citing your survey there, are you looking at parents who work basically a 9-to-5 job?
Well, which piece of it?
Oh, that you were talking about the slots available. Are you talking about mainly a daytime, Monday to Monday, Friday type?
Right.
Yeah. I think there's still a huge need for that outside of that.
That's right.
From hospital workers to tourist workers to, you know, a whole host of...
I think children
that aren't even being looked at, perhaps in that space.
That may be, and children whose families are working graveyard shifts.
All kinds of arenas of work. Okay. That's just interesting to probably only compounds the need. You know, it just heightens that, puts more numbers.
I'm sure you're right. Yeah.
I have a question. Yes. Do states regulate how much a care provider should receive per child or age-wise, or is there any kind of regulation?
For those who are publicly funded, yes. There's a limit to how much you can receive per child, either at a center or as a family child care provider, if you are taking care of children whose families receive aid for family to dependent children, AFDC support. But aside from that, if you're running your own center and not taking public money,
it's not enough. It's $1.25 an hour in Oregon for a child 2 and under.
Yeah, it's about half of what the market is.
It's
in the state
real
of
hard. You don't want to take, I can't.
You subsidize, as a family child care provider or as a daycare center, when you take a child who's on a public assistance program, you are subsidizing the state. Many providers do that, both in centers and in family daycare homes. They will do that because of the type of people that are doing child care, but they do it knowing full well that they are subsidizing the state because the state will not be paying the amount that the open market is paying.
There's tremendous paperwork.
Whoops. I'm going to keep
And they don't know, and the pay doesn't come through, it can be a month or 2 months late. There's been a lot of problems in Oregon with some of this issue. Who do you write the check to?
Yay!
This is a vicious check.
Yeah, I know.
Please be careful.
You better take this and hold on to it for
the
next session.
See, and then you have the check sent directly to the provider. Well, then you got to count all these hours. And then, you know, if the kid is sick or doesn't show up, and it's all, and is the mom, did she go shopping after work or go have a drink? I mean, the hours that the mom's at work and the hours the kid's in daycare, and it's better equal out. And, you know, it gets to be a real deal. Yeah, because it means that you've got, you've got a whole list of people waiting in line that'll pay you with, very good money and you go.
So one of the things that our churches ought to be doing in terms of our advocacy work is advocating at a state and national level for adequate provider reimbursement and what would you say, an effective system for doing that, right?
Yeah, effective pay system.
An effective system.
One of the things also that I said in my church when they originally were considering doing it, child care, was the fact that in our area the primary needs were for infant care and for after school care. And that, you know, if the church really wanted to get involved in child care and perform a service, then those would be two areas at which they could really look. And providing it at an affordable rate for the parent, knowing that it would not make money. When you ask the church to do something like this, knowing that they are not going to make any money off of it, that it's going to be a mission and it's going to be an expense to the congregation, then suddenly it seems to lose a lot of the flavor.
Okay.
The other real hard thing I have found is, as a part-time worker mother,
absolutely.
To find part-time care. I mean, you have to pay at a full-time rate. And I understand the logic that's a spot,
they take a
full-time slot. I understand that, but you know, trying to work part-time so you have more time for your kids makes it even harder to do when you have to pay the full
both there.
And that works for either in-home or center care, too. As a mini-center, I was licensed for 12 children, and as a mini-center, I was more flexible in there. I was able to balance the needs of people who worked part-time, but most people are not able to do that. Mm-hmm.
So we have to provide care at an affordable rate, that we have to be clear that doing child care is not a money-making proposition or not something where we're going to bring the church into the black. But it's true, a lot of churches think of it from that perspective.
And it can be done that way, but if you do that, you're not going to be providing the service, the mission service to the people who are in need. You're simply going to be collecting money from providing daycare for kids, but not reaching the ones who are single parents.
It may well not be a quality program.
Yeah. No. Well, and it can even be a quality program if people can afford to pay your rates.
Right. And then we need to offer care which meets the family's needs.
Yeah. Yeah. At times that are suitable, under transportation situations that are suitable, all those things.
It's really hard.
it's the ultimate.
It's very hard, which is why we go back to here.
Well, it's the sick child or the marginal. Yeah.
Yes, that illness mm-hmm. issue is a big one.
Mm-hmm. So we're talking about sick child care, which is a very tough issue.
Which is, The church, a church could concentrate in a larger city on number 4 by itself.
Actually, the guy who's doing music here, who just left on Monday, mm-hmm. yesterday,
mm-hmm. That's
he does child care with children with chicken pox. That's his job.
Really? And,
yeah.
It's a sick child center that's attached to But that number 4, in some areas, you could really make that big work.
Let me share a few resources that I have, because there's a lot of stuff out here which is really very valuable in doing the kind of work that we're talking about. Now, starting off, in terms of starting a center in your congregation, there's a new publication called Early Childhood Ministry in Your Church, which is just put out by the ELCA, and it's soup to nuts on how to do it. Reasons for doing it, steps for making decisions, understanding young children, planning the program, creating the physical environment, establishing financial management, staffing the center, examining legal and licensing issues, finding policies, working with families, working with the church. Mm-hmm. You can tell it's been written by educators because it's just jammed, it's very well organized, etc., etc. This is a similar resource which does not, this resource also includes some information on child development, and curriculum, which this resource does not. This was done by our office, the National Council of Churches, and it also talks about how to set up a task force in your congregation if they want to get started on running a program, mm-hmm. How to do a needs assessment in your community, what kind of child care is appropriate and is doable relative to the congregation's resources and the needs of the community, et cetera, et cetera. This is brand new, and this has been used by many people and has been found to be very useful. So both of those things are available. In terms of a child care center, this is a new book out of our office, Congregations in Child Care, which was jointly published with the National Association for the Education of Young Children, which is the major professional organization of early childhood educators. And this is a book which is a self-study process which complements NAYC's accreditation process. And it's specifically focused on the church-child care center relationship, which is what you were talking about, how many relationships run amok. And this is a self-study process where you start and you examine administration, finance, management, et cetera, et cetera, within all those different areas of relationship. So that if you do it on the front end, then you obviously don't run into problems down the line, but if you're running into problems, this is a self-study process which can help you to rectify that. One of the centerpieces of this, one of the things that we feel is very important, is that you have a curriculum which is an anti-bias curriculum, a curriculum which really teaches children not to be racist, not to be sexist, not to be homophobic, not to be ageist or handicapped, etc. So, which teaches children really to love in the most profound and genuine sense of the word. And so I would recommend this book as well, which we're going to talk about a lot next week when I'm doing another series on anti-bias child raising and education. This is Anti-Bias Curriculum, Tools of Empowerment for Young Children, I would recommend it to any early childhood provider. Absolutely excellent. That's from the National Association for the Education of Young Children. Our office has a book on wages and benefits, things that you need to consider, some facts and figures if you're starting a program in your church. Also a publication on liability insurance, what happened with the liability insurance crisis, why, how to avoid it in the future, what you can do now in terms of risk management and lowering policy costs. We have a public a policy statement if you're running into problems in terms of your, or running into issues with your church about, is child care important, why are we doing this, what is our mission, what kind of ways can we approach it. The Lutheran Church has signed on to this in 1984. When it was published by the National Council of Churches. It's all the churches in the National Council of Churches. So this is a very useful document in terms of working with a congregation about what is child care ministry. Welcome the Child is a wonderful resource that's just been put out by the Children's Defense Fund in Washington, D.C. And it's a program for churches who don't really, it's for any congregation, but I think it's particularly useful for congregations who know they want to work on child on children's issues, but don't necessarily know what they want to do. So for your congregation might particularly want to get a hold of this book. And it talks about the situation facing children in this country today, but then looks at child care and Head Start, education, vulnerable children and families, homelessness and housing, maternal and child health, youth self-sufficiency, and teen pregnancy prevention, and goes through a lot of the statistics, the data of what's going on, and then a process which would help a congregation move through to decide what they wanted to do. And it has worksheets and sermon ideas, scriptural passages, etc., etc. So this is very useful for a congregation working on any kind of working on any kind of children's issues. And for those of us who are more involved in advocacy, this is my Bible, if it were. That I go back to over and again, and every workshop that you come to, I will hold this up. Save America's Children, 1991, is the 1991 version of the Green Book, which is put out by the Children's Defense Fund. There's no better advocacy organization for children in this country than the Children's Defense Fund. And it is no accident that if you go anywhere in Washington, people are quoting the Children's Defense Fund, because they put together wonderful information with state-by-state stats. So this would be an invaluable resource. I feel like we haven't really worked on this particular piece enough, and it's, maybe it's almost time to go. It really is time to go. It's five of.
Well, I would suggest one thing that we could put under advocacy, and that would be that the state reimbursement for child care for working parents who are on assistance, that should be competitive with with the going rates, or that should reflect the going rates in a particular geographic area. I'm not saying this well, but one of the reasons that it's so difficult for single parents on any kind of assistance to find a child or to work and to come out of that circumstance is that they are not able to afford child care of any sort, regardless of quantity, so that the rates provided for through assistance programs should reflect the actual cost or the market rate.
And I think, I don't mean to interrupt you while you're writing, but I was just thinking the whole level of advocacy, I mean, we just need to be able to bring this as a national level. Not that I think the government can solve anything from the top down, but in terms of its value and its concern to us, I mean, the people in this room are concerned about it, but there it needs to be given its place in the sun.
They have made a few steps. They passed what they call the ABC bill. They're working. It's slow.
The Child Care Block Grant, and one of the things that needs to be done is that we need to ensure that Congress allocates all the money that was in those bills each year. It's not a given. I mean, you can pass a bill and they don't allocate the money. So one of the things that needs to happen is people need to push to make sure that the allocations are to the level that is required. With Head Start, they passed very exciting legislation. At this point, there's only about 20% of the children who are eligible are actually in Head Start, but there's legislation on the books now which would require the government to provide enough money, enough funding to, and by 1994, ensure enough slots for all eligible children. We have to make sure that the government actually does that, that our politicians vote the money that was in the original legislation. The ELCA is doing a lot. Your offices in Chicago are concerned about it. But I think they also need support. Your people in Washington, your public policy office there, Sarah Naylor and Jerry Falk and other people are very, very good. I mean, Jerry's not in Washington, but working on church and society issues are very, very good, but they need support. And they need to hear from ELCA folks across the country. The ELCA women have done some very exciting work on children. And that's an exciting piece to hook into.
Parental leave and job security are important issues too. As an adopted parent and a federal employee, I was not allowed to take maternity leave. I mean, I took it, but I mean, I didn't get maternity leave. But my boss said, no problem, we'll work out this deal. And I mean, he was basically illegal in what he did. But it worked for our needs because he was a human and I was a human. But technically, I mean, you know, our legislation defines parenting. Maternity leave is for a mother who's sick and tired from having a baby. It's not for parenting anybody. And it's a real archaic notion of even what maternity leave is. Mm. And for parents, for fathers, for paternity leave, or whatever you want to call it, or shared leave.
What was the regulation or the change that was made within the last few years? Was that nationwide or only in the state of Washington that guarantees any program that provides sick leave for parents must provide family sick leave? That is, a parent
That's
can
a
have
local parent, sure.
A parent if your company provides it, you may have up to 10 days of sick leave. You may take that sick leave either for your own personal illness or for illness of children or other members of the family. I thought that was a national.
The federal government defines it,
I don't know,
as I understand it, only for a communicable disease, and you must be the primary care, you know,
the
giver.
The primary caregiver, I think, is what
it's communicable.
Well, I knew it wouldn't have anything to do with maternity leave.
No, but it's not like your child is home with a bad cold or something. It has to be something like a contagious situation. Because I went through and read all this, because I was a federal worker and here I was, and I was an instant mom who didn't prepare kind of for these things. But it was pretty pathetic when I read through the regs.
A lot more. I mean, this country does not have a family policy.
No, it doesn't.
And we need to establish family policy that goes, that is part, you know, it encompasses child care, but goes far beyond that.
Sure.
I want to close the session, and I want to close by reading something that we're all familiar with, Children Learn What They Live. This is a version which was adapted from Dorothy Law Nolte by a Baptist leader. If children live with criticism, they learn to condemn. If children live with hostility, they learn to fight. If children live with ridicule, they learn to be shy. If children live with shame, they learn to feel guilty. If children live with tolerance, they learn to be patient. If children live with encouragement, they learn confidence. If children live with praise, they learn to appreciate. If children live with fairness, they learn justice. If children live with security, they learn to have faith. If children live with approval, they learn to like themselves. If children live with acceptance and friendship, they learn to find love in the world.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll be back for some of those.
All right. Okay. Okay, great.
I'll get some of those too.
Okay. Okay, good.
I'll provide myself. Can
those books be bought anywhere?
Not here, unfortunately. I
no,
ordered.
No, I mean not here, but any bookstore, and are they available through?
No, they're all from professional organizations or communities.
I
so
would,
you
I
need
would
to
if
get them.
You could put those on display at some, you know,
so
in a bookstore, in the library, or something, so people could at least jot down the address.
Why don't I go? That would be in a bookstore or the library.
Well, I don't know. We'd need to ask somebody where that would go. Just you know, is it? So people could...
Or have them out so we could look at them.
Just here in class, probably.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have to worry about them.
I don't know where's the more appropriate place. Right.
stood and the resource center would be one place.
Oh, yeah, and that's right here in the building, right, so that would be very easy for folks to go. You could just mark it display.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But generally those are through NIAC?
They're generally either through NIAC, there's NIAC, the ELCA, and my office.
Yeah.
Yes,
it's those addresses.
It's those addresses.
Yeah. That'd be great.
Good. Oh, I forgot to plug for tomorrow. If anybody wants to come to Family Child Care, are you going to come for Family Child Care?
It depends on what time it is I'm driving.
10:45.
No.
I'm sorry. I would love your input. I really would. I've never been a Family Child Care provider.
I was at the International Child Members Conference, the first one they had a few years ago over in Wales, incredibly. I think it was really fascinating. And then I've been to several of our national Family Child Care Providers Associations, a lot of input through the Children's Defense Fund. They helped to get the program going in the beginning, which is difficult for people out here in this state because we're an extremely independent group of child care providers. Yeah. That is, we consider it a profession and we insist that our members consider themselves professional, and we provide a tremendous amount of training. Now, I'm out of it as of July 1st of last year, after many, many years. But I wish I could be here for it because...
I think we're probably going to have a relatively small group because there's other stuff going on in family child care, although it's very important. It's not a very well-known and recognized issue, as it should be.
And it's
but I was hoping we could do some real strategizing about churches and congregations and national communities and, think about what needs
to happen. Well, I know a lot of churches back east, as I found out when I started going to national programs, I discovered that a lot of churches have taken over the USDA food program and served as, I can't even think of the word for it now, thank God I'm being under the fern. Anyway, where they have kind of been the mother hen over a cluster of family child care providers, whereas in our state, we do it ourselves. Our child care association provides that function. But it was interesting to find out that in many of the eastern states, that's rather what happens. And then to find out the amount of regulation and training, recruiting, etc., that is done by those parent organizations that are doing the food programs. So, and some of them come through churches.
Yeah.
But it's such a massive job. It's a tremendous task.
But a church doesn't have to take on the whole thing. No. You know, they can take on some piece of it. If you don't have the square footage in your congregation, that isn't what you want to do, they're going to center. There's certainly many things that you could do in terms of supporting family child providers.
Oh, sure.
And I have some models, and so tomorrow I'm wondering how you know that. We're developing a manual, too, for local congregations. And so, people bring on this effect and pass that on to the business learning.
Well, one of the things that's becoming a widespread issue or area of working together for family child care providers is where they band together and do a preschool. And so I can picture a church providing a space where the family daycare homes come together and do cooperative preschool. And the daycares, family daycares hire teachers and things. We do this, and one of the ways we're able to provide that was that we've got to deal with our school district so that for minimal rent, they provide the space for us. But our family child care providers back home, which is in North Seattle area, have enough interest to where we hire two teachers who do five classes a week each.
I don't understand. Okay.
The family child care provider brings...
For the providers or for the children?
Both. The provider, the family daycare provider brings the children that they have in their care for a two-hour period in the morning. And like any co-op preschool, only instead of the parent being there with the child, the provider's there with the children, but the children are of all ages, from infant up to kindergarten years.
And how often do they do that?
Some go once a week, some go twice a week.
Ongoing,
year after year, the parent.
And so you would have more than one family child care provider?
We usually try to keep it to less than 24 children in the room.
Which means
so you have five or six childcare providers sometimes, or you might only have four childcare providers from the teachers.
But a church which has a center uh-huh. could offer something like that.
Oh, sure. Yeah, lots of ideas.
Well, you could
one room do interrelated work with them. Then you start talking about your insurance and liability, however. That's when you start bringing children from one program and putting them in with another program. I did a lot of work with